Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. Let's go to the show. We're going to turn, as we do most weeks at this time, to new developments in the world of COVID-19 and other infectious diseases this administration seems determined to give a second shot. Our guest is Dr. John Swartzberg, Clinical Professor Emeritus of Infectious Diseases at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg.
Good morning.
I want to start with a news item. There is a measles outbreak that is centered in South Carolina, though it has spread to other states, started getting reported in October, but just seems to continue picking up steam. The last top lines released going into the weekend connected 700 cases of measles to that outbreak, which, if you're someone who charts measles cases over time in the United States, looks like a big spike, even over the baseline during last year, which was a bad year, and puts us at the brink of losing our measles elimination status. First of all, what do we know about this outbreak centered in the South?
Well, it's related to some of the other outbreaks that many of the other outbreaks we've been seeing throughout 2025. And the outbreak in South Carolina now is really very substantial, as you were just pointing out. So an awful lot of cases, and not only are we seeing a lot of cases in South Carolina, but we're seeing cases of people from the rest of the United States who visit South Carolina, and people there come back and bring measles to those states. And California is one of those. This case that we had last week in Napa Valley was in a person who was unimmunized, who had traveled to South Carolina, came back and developed measles. So not only is South Carolina right now the epicenter, along with Utah and Northern Arizona, but these are states, especially South Carolina right now, that's spreading measles to the rest of the United States, and only to those people, almost only to those people who are not immunized.
Who are the small sliver of people who are immunized but still susceptible to contracting measles?
If you're fully immunized against measles, the protection against getting measles at any time in your life is maybe as high as 3-4%. So that means if you have 100 people going to South Carolina right now and around somebody who's got the measles, but all of those 100 were vaccinated, you could have as many as maybe 3 cases of measles. So the vaccine is not perfect, but 97% for people fully immunized is awfully good. It's one of our best vaccines. And not only is it awfully good after you get the vaccine, but it appears to be awfully good for the rest of your life.
So there is a slim possibility of breakthrough infections, but with a well-immunized population, you would expect an outbreak to burn out. One sick person couldn't get enough other people sick to sustain a chain of transmission.
That's correct. That's why we use the term herd immunity, because if you get enough people vaccinated or enough people previously infected, then the virus is going to have a very tough time finding a home for it. And it essentially burns out. With smallpox, that's how we eradicated it. That means smallpox is gone. It's not a fear for the human population again, the only infectious disease that has been eradicated. But as you pointed out at the beginning, Brian, measles was eliminated from the Americas, including the United States, which was in 2000. So we had eliminated cases of measles. The only cases we were seeing were when somebody traveled around somewhere else in the world and brought measles back to the United States, then we would see cases. But besides that, we hardly saw any measles. Now, people may think, well, you know, it's measles. It's just a childhood disease. But as you and I have talked about several times, it's not just a childhood disease. While it occurs predominantly in children, it can occur at any age in people who are susceptible to it, and the damage that it can do is really considerable. It makes you awfully sick at best. It hospitalizes up to about 20% of people who get measles. It can cause permanent neurologic damage in some, and tragically, it can kill some. So it's pretty virulent in those ways. And what we've learned about probably in the last, oh, 2 or 3 decades is that it also damages our immune system and it makes us more susceptible to other infectious diseases after we've had measles. And that increased susceptibility can last months to years. And that increased susceptibility manifests itself in people getting sick from diseases they previously had immunity to because they had measles. So I would plead with people not to think measles is just a benign disease. It's a terribly important disease that we get rid of if we possibly can.
Speaking to Dr. John Swartzberg, clinical professor emeritus of infectious diseases at UC Berkeley School of Public Health, and he is here principally to answer your questions about topics in his bailiwick. The phone number, 1-800-958-9008. That's 1-800-958-9008 for your corona calls. Before I start plucking questions out of the inbox, Dr. Swartzberg, I thought we should kind of survey the landscape of the other diseases that normally circulate in higher numbers this time of year, influenza-like illnesses. Influenza seems to have peaked in the last charts I looked at, although I know that might just be like a provisional peak before a second one. And COVID doesn't seem to have gotten very high, mercifully, this winter. What do the top lines look like to you?
Well, let's start with the worst of those three, COVID, influenza, and RSV, respiratory syncytial virus. The worst is influenza right now, as you're pointing out. And it may have peaked. It looks like, for example, in New York, that it has peaked and it's come down for over 2 weeks. The numbers have been coming down. That's very encouraging. Here in California, the numbers have seemed to have peaked, but we saw a little blip in children again in the last week. The data we have ended about 7 days ago, so we're about a week behind, but it looked like maybe it in young children, it was going back up again. So we have to keep a close eye on that. Last year, we did see a double hump. That is, we had a lot of cases, then it seemed to come down for 2 or 3 weeks, and then it went back up again. So it looks like things are better with influenza here in California, including the Bay Area, and in the United States. But this virus is hard to predict over the next probably 6 or 8 weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw another rise in cases. In reference to comparing influenza to COVID right now, it's really interesting to look at some of the data. California tragically has lost just under 140 people, 139 people at last count this influenza season. That number of people have died. If we compare that with COVID, in the same influenza season, there have been 26 deaths. So this year, as I think everybody's noticing just in reality, that is, influenza is really the gorilla in the room. And COVID continues to lay back. Even when we look at the wastewater data here in the Bay Area and in California, the wastewater data for COVID is low. So far, so good. There have been some signs scattered around the United States where we're starting to see a gradual increase in COVID, but nothing dramatic. So COVID is laying low right now and giving the playing field to influenza. And finally, RSV, while we're seeing cases, we're seeing a rise in cases throughout many parts of the United States, the numbers remain considerably lower than we've previously seen. And I think we can attribute that to a large extent to the new vaccine we've had now going into our third year. So COVID, influenza, RSV. Influenza is the worst one right now. Keep an eye on COVID, but it's remaining pretty quiet. And RSV, if you're a candidate for the vaccine, be sure to get it.
1-800-958-9008 to put a question to Dr. John Swartzberg. The low COVID numbers, this is the second year in a second year in a row where the numbers have not looked that bad. And I keep wondering, with my layperson's brain, have we settled into a kind of equilibrium where the process of mutation has helped the virus find most of the advantages it can find by randomly mutating? Most of the population has acquired some sort of immunity, either through vaccination or infection or both, and we've just kind of settled into a new baseline that is not horrible.
It certainly feels like we're at a new baseline that's not horrible. So I would agree with your intuition there. And I would also agree that the explanation for that is that just about everybody in the United States and pretty much everybody worldwide has some degree of immunity to this virus, either by vaccine or by previous infection or infections or a combination of those two. So I think that's playing a major role in holding COVID at bay. And that's why I think we can predict with a fair degree of confidence that we're not going to see again the horrible times when COVID mutated and just exploded, like with Omicron. That said, the other interesting phenomenon is that COVID is not mutating in terms of the challenge it's presenting to our immune system. There has been a lot of talk about how COVID has changed its immunologic nature a little bit, that is, it mutated, and that could lead to another outbreak, another big outbreak. But we haven't seen that now in a good while. There's no guarantee. We can't predict nature and no guarantee that we won't see it, but we're certainly not. And I am relatively confident that we're going to see COVID as background noise and maybe occasionally wreaking its ugly head up to cause more disease. But I don't think we're going to see anything like we experienced in 2020, 2021, 2022, and spilling into 2023.
That is the most positive you have sounded about the COVID outlook in the past 6 years, Dr. Swartzberg.
I know. And it is the most positive I've been. I'm reluctant to be too positive because I don't know what's around the corner. Nobody does. And we could have another explosion of a mutated form that just evades our immunity entirely. But the likelihood is that we're not going to see that. I'm confident that we're unfortunately not going to get rid of COVID. It's always going to be background noise. We used to think of the winter, the late fall, winter, early spring as being influenza and RSV season. Now, I think going forward, we're going to be thinking of the late fall, winter, and early spring as influenza, COVID, and RSV season. And unfortunately, COVID has not established what we call seasonality, meaning it doesn't confine itself to the winter months. So we could see summer outbreaks again, early fall outbreaks like we saw this last year. So COVID still settling down, but continues to be important to watch.
All right, Dr. Swartzberg, we're starting to fill up the phone line, so let's go straight to the phones and pluck from the inbox if time remains for us. 1-800-958-9008 for your corona calls. We'll start in the West Bay, where Joel is on the line in San Francisco. Good morning, Joel.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you. I'm good. In 1 month from now, I'm going to travel, and I had my COVID shot on September 15th. So I have to go on an airplane for the first time in like 5 years, okay? So I was wondering if I should get a COVID shot right at the beginning of February. And, you know, I have 4 months protection, but if that's waning, do I need another? I'm 78 years old, so I'm a high risk group. I have kidney disease.
78 years old. And okay. So when you get on that plane, you're going to be about 5 months out from that shot you got in September?
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Okay. And Joel, so, are you going someplace fun?
I'm going to Maui for 1 month.
Good for you. All right. Yeah. Dr. Swartzberg, what should Joel do?
I don't, yeah. Yeah, go on.
as a 78-year-old who had his last shot in mid-September?
Well, great question and an important question, Joel. We have good data that shows that the vaccine gives its maximum protection right at, within about 2 weeks of getting vaccinated. And you have really good protection for the next few months. But by 4 months, we're seeing some waning of protection. And by 6 months, there's considerable waning of protection. You still have some degree, but it's not as much. If I was you, I don't think there's anything magical about 5 months versus 6 months. I would want to be protected for that trip. So I would probably get a booster a couple of weeks before you get on the plane and have that trip. You'll have excellent protection then for your month vacation.
Hope that helps, Joel, and I hope you have a wonderful first post-pandemic trip. Let's stay in San Francisco and go to David. Good morning.
Oh, morning all. Yeah, there were two things. You were talking about COVID and the measles. With COVID, I understand it's turned not from a kind of a dry cough, but to a wet cough. And didn't seem to have the same symptoms as what was 5 years ago. So if you could describe it like that. And the other, I'm pretty disturbed at Bobby Kennedy's madness. And I'm wondering, you know, Trump is clearly hanging around with Nazis and whatnot. Do you have any sense that these guys are really pushing a master race and that anybody that survives these diseases is some master race, and that everybody else is disposable?
Well, we're gonna stick to the envelope of Dr. Swartzberg's professional and academic credentials and leave the politicking to other guests. But on the question of dry versus wet cough, Dr. Swartzberg, this has come up a lot in reference to new variants, kind of anecdata reported by clinicians or patients that some new subvariant has a slightly different constellation of clinical signs. Is there anything to that that's actually useful?
I think David's making an interesting observation. We should step back and say, why do you get a wet cough versus a dry one? A wet cough, meaning you're bringing up stuff, versus a dry one is just sort of hacky and but nothing, not productive of anything. What determines whether it's dry or wet is how much involvement there is in the airways, the trachea, the bronchi. And if there's a lot of inflammation from the viral infection and the immune response to it, then you produce lots of excess mucus, and you wind up bringing up stuff. So that would be the wet cough. If there's less inflammation in those airways, then you're not going to be bringing up nearly as much. So it's much more of a dry hacking cough. What's determining that is how virulent the virus is and how robust our immune system is to counteracting the virus. And I think that as opposed to there being something inherently different about SARS-CoV-2 today versus SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID from a year ago, I think it's more likely that our degree of immunity in the population, as we were talking about a little while ago, Brian, our degree of immunity is so high that it's tending for most people to cause less lower airway disease, less bronchial involvement. And when it does, it doesn't seem to cause as severe involvement because of that background immunity. And that results in more people having a dry, hacky cough as opposed to a productive one. So I think that's how I envision it, but that's just one person's look at what may be going on here. One
And
caveat is, go ahead.
as a clinician, you see someone with a dry cough versus a wet cough, a cough that's productive, as having less severe disease, a sign of their having less severe disease.
Generally speaking, but not always, but generally
Okay.
speaking, yes. And I was just going to say the caveat to this explanation is that if you're bringing up a lot of stuff, one can get what's called a secondary bacterial infection. That is, the virus has damaged our airways, and it allows bacteria that normally couldn't proliferate in our airways to get down there and do that. And we can get a secondary bacterial infection where you're bringing up quite a bit of sputum. And that could be a sign that you need to see a physician and get your lungs listened to and maybe a chest x-ray to make sure you don't have any a secondary bacterial infection. So that's sort of through the clinician's eyes how I would look at this point.
Super helpful. Thank you, Dr. Swartzberg. Let's go to Idaho next. Holly is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about the RSV vaccine. How often are we supposed to get it?
Right now, Holly, it's once and done.
Okay.
I know. That's good news. Now, we have data now going out to close to 3 years, and the data shows that we still have protection. It seems to wane a little bit, but not dramatically. So we have protection. If you got it 3 years ago, you don't need it again at this point. But keep an eye on the literature. Keep asking that important question, because when we have data at 4 years, how good will our immunity be? And then 5 years and so on. So right now, once and done, but we may need a booster at some point. And I don't know at this time what that point will be.
So any new vaccine like the RSV vaccine, we won't know if it lasts for 20 years until it's existed for 20 years.
That's right. What's interesting is here we are talking about the RSV vaccine that has a really good duration of protection. And then we were talking about the COVID vaccine that it sort of wimps out after a number of months. So every vaccine has its own qualities in terms of how it stimulates our immune system.
Let's try to squeeze in one more caller. Thaddeus is on the line in Los Banos. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg. Good morning, gentlemen. A couple of questions.
We just have time for one, Thaddeus, so pick your most important one.
Oh, my God. COVID? Well, actually, let's go with, should we get the shingles shot if you're 55 years old and you go to New Bethany old age home? And you haven't had it, but obviously you're exposed to it, shingles at the...
Sure.
At New Bethany.
Shingles is a reactivation of chickenpox you may have had as a child. And if you're a candidate for the shingles vaccine and age is a major major criteria, be sure to get it, because shingles is a miserable disease, just a miserable disease. And not only that, but there's been some really interesting information over the last several years, some just in the last year, that people who get the shingles vaccine appear to be protected against other things like maybe cardiovascular disease over the next year or two, and maybe even dementia to some degree. So there are salutary effects of the shingles vaccine and maybe other vaccines well beyond the protection against that particular disease.
I think Thaddeus's question was, if you are someone who is not in the age group for whom the shingles vaccine is recommended, but you're going to a senior facility with a lot of people who are more vulnerable to shingles, should you consider getting vaccinated ahead of schedule?
No. Unless you have shingles currently, you're not contagious. You're not going to spread the virus to anybody else. If you're going to a place and you're worried that you're going to get exposed to people with shingles, if you've had chickenpox in the past, you're not going to get shingles from somebody else. Shingles, again, is a reactivation of chickenpox that you had as a child.
All right. Dr. Swartzberg, we'll leave it there for this week. Thank you so much for spending another Monday morning with us.
Welcome. My pleasure. Bye, Brian.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for next week's, you can email coronacalls@kpfa.org. Or tune in live to Call In Live. Usually we air Monday mornings right after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA 94.1 FM in the Bay Area or kpfa.org anywhere in the world. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like The information is useful to a lot of people, and we ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. If you can help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.